Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Here we are once again on Connecting Faith, and honored to have you along today. Appreciate your company. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls, Carissa's at the phones. Got a great hour ahead, Ted, as we talk about this is a topic that maybe gets some notice in October, but really it should be mentioned all year round, because we're going to talk about October National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And, you know, sadly, it's, as we're going to hear from our guest today, it's not just something that we should be aware of in October.
That's right. Yeah, it's an ongoing problem, sadly. And in the statistic I see in our promo material, one in five children is a victim of sexual abuse.
We want to talk particularly about starting out talking about children today, because our guests have written a new book about that. But it reminds me that, you know, some areas we need to especially be praying about. This seems like that's one of them.
Yeah.
James 5:16 teaches that the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man or woman accomplishes much. And so we just want to remind you that here at Faith Radio, we do have a Faith Radio prayer team. And you can sign up for that. You get weekly prayer emails on that. It's at myfaithradio.com/prayer. We also, of course, have Prayer Works, which is available when you go to My Faith Radio as well. And many people are using that as a way to just post prayer requests. And if you've not, you know, checked that out, you can pray for those requests there, and then you can send an anonymous little response, kind of an email ping, which is particularly encouraging for someone that submitted that prayer request to know somebody's praying for you.
Yeah, that's right. And there is power in prayer. We know that. My wife is a marriage and family therapist, has worked with individuals and some that have experienced this terrible tragedy of abuse as well, and seen great healing that will come through the prayer of many people. And healing is there, too. So there's the hope angle in this conversation.
So check that out. A couple of prayer opportunities for you at myfaithradio.com. You can sign up for the Faith Radio prayer team. You can also use Prayer Works. Let's jump into our conversation today. We're glad to be able to welcome back Justin Holcomb. Justin's an Episcopal priest and professor of theology and Christian thought at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary and Reformed Theological Seminary. And he has co-authored, well, he's written several books on his own. He's co-authored several books, including Is It My Fault? And Rid of My Disgrace. He also serves on the boards for REST, R-E-S-T, which stands for Real Escape from the Sex Trade, and GRACE, which is the acronym for Godly Response to Abuse in Christian Environments. And we're honored to also be joined by his wife today. Lindsay is joining us as well. She counsels victims of sexual assault and domestic violence and is the co-founder of REST. And Lindsay has provided crisis intervention to victims of sexual assault and conducted a variety of training seminars to service providers, and she has co-authored with Justin Is It My Fault? And Rid of My Disgrace. And together they have written a brand new book, which is going to be the focus of our discussion, or at least part of our hour. It's called God Made All of Me. It's a book to help children protect their bodies. We'll get into that in a moment. Justin and Lindsay, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Fun to be back. And I'm glad that I can actually be doing this with Lindsay finally. I think this is my third time, but the other two times I was solo. So it'll be fun for everyone to hear from Lindsay.
And she has promised not to correct everything you say, but I think.
just the big errors.
Just the big errors. Okay. Well,
oh, boy.
we do want to focus on, October, National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It seems it was a good opportunity for us to bring this topic up, and the fact that you've got the new book out. But I just saw something online talking about that. It says, domestic violence thrives when we are silent, it said online. It said, but if we take a stand and work together, we can end domestic violence. Justin, we'll start with you. What does taking a stand look like? What does that mean?
Yeah, and it does thrive on silence, because when people don't acknowledge it or know about it, and they just assume everything's fine, and then the person who is suffering doesn't know who they can trust, who they should go to, if someone will actually believe them. And so it actually does thrive on this silence and shame mixed together. And that's why I like the fact that we actually have a month of October for domestic violence awareness. And so on the church side, and Lindsay, I mean, she was the victim's advocate at a domestic violence shelter, so she can talk about it in more kind of big picture standing up. But in the church specifically, it would look like the minister or whomever's preaching acknowledging the reality of domestic abuse and intimate partner abuse happening. And the statistics say about 1 in 5, 1 in 6, 1 in 4, somewhere around there, who are in intimate partner relationships, because not everyone who suffers violence is in a marriage. It could be dating, it could be an ex, it could be a divorce. So any type of partnership where there's violence taking place, people are suffering and need to hear the good news. So it looks like the minister actually saying, listing it and saying, you know what, many of us have suffered in various ways. Sometimes we suffer because of the sin that we've committed, and we've, you know, make a list of various ways that we sin. And then some of us have suffered because of other people's sin against us, and that could look like sexual abuse or domestic abuse or enlisting other ways. And that just starts it, and that it causes, it allows the person sitting in the pew who's in the church to consider trusting that person and letting them know that what the Bible has to say and the grace from Jesus, that from his who he is and what he's done on the cross and resurrection, applies to that point, because many people suffering domestic abuse think that God's getting them back because they had an abortion, because they're not a great wife, because they're not a great husband, because they were a horrible daughter, because they're not good parents. This is, you know, many of them think that God's doing some type of karma with them and getting them back. So they need to hear that it's not their fault. That's why we titled our book on domestic violence, the question, is it my fault? Because that's the main question they wrestle with. Is it my fault that this is happening? No. And they need to hear a clear explanation. It's not your fault if you are the recipient of someone else's sin and harm. And God sees and he cares and he knows and he has compassion for you. And maybe this community can support you and be here for you. So that's one way that it looks like to stand up. But Lindsay's got some others for kind of out there in the larger, not just churches and ministers.
I would say, you know, one way that an individual can stand up against domestic violence is contact your local domestic violence shelter. They're there in your community. They're everywhere. They are wonderful resources. They do amazing things, and they need help. They need volunteers. And so an individual can go through the volunteer training and find out where they best gifted to serve, whether it's behind the scenes or in, you know, in the shelter doing direct contact or having direct contact with victims and their children. And this is helpful on two levels. One, it gets individuals into these shelters to care and comfort victims who are going through trauma and they have grief and they need help and support and mentorship. But it also helps the volunteer just get educated about the issue and see the faces, you know, that represent what is domestic violence. So then those volunteers, when they're not in the shelter and they're just interacting with their friends, if something comes up where they, you know, see some red flags that maybe are in their friend or their family member's, you know, relationship, they can point out things and they can, you know, express to their family member or friend, if they're that person's in a domestic violence relationship, hey, like, this isn't good the way that he or she is interacting with you. Like, this is violent. This is abusive. Because oftentimes victims, one, will feel isolated and alone, but very often they feel like this is just how it is. Like, there's nothing. This is just relationships. And they don't know that this is domestic violence or that there is an alternative or that there is a way out. And so I think having individuals get involved with shelters bridges that gap of bringing people in and serving, but also just getting educated in general, because this is prevalent. We call it a public health epidemic. It's happening in every, you know, socioeconomic community level. It's happening no matter your race or your religion, your background, your ethnicity. So you're going to contact someone who's you're going to come in contact with someone, as long as you're talking to people who is in some sort of an abusive relationship, and possibly having education and having compassion would be so helpful in getting them options and walking through just the process with them.
It's hard to imagine that, you know, those that are in it don't really know. But, I mean, I think we've talked about that before, but that's true, isn't it? That people just maybe assume that this is really the way it is. And I suppose if they've grown up maybe in a situation where abuse happened, it doesn't seem out of the norm.
Well, that's why, and that's exactly it. Many people would think and say something like, well, if it's, you know, so bad, why are they still there? And come on, like, I mean, it must not be that bad. Well, sometimes they don't know they're in an abusive relationship because what they've seen has made that normal. And other times, no one wants to believe they're in an abusive relationship. You know, and so that's why we actually, the very first chapter we did in the domestic violence book is, Am I in an Abusive Relationship? And we sent the book, the manuscript, to some experts who were on the field serving people, and they said, you need to actually have a chapter on that, because what we're finding is that many people who are suffering abuse in their relationship, they don't even know the signs of an abusive relationship because they think that's become normal to them. And abusers are really good at making the person they're abusing feel like they're to blame. And so you actually have people who are suffering because of someone else's abuse, but they think they're to blame because that's how they've been either raised and or that's what they've been told, and they started believing it because, you know, they keep on being told, oh, I'm doing this because of you're doing this, and, you know, what do you expect? I mean, come on. And so they've been blamed for so long, they start believing that lie.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break and come back and talk more. Justin and Lindsay Holcomb have co-written a couple of wonderful books, including Rid of My Disgrace, Hope and Healing for Victims of Sexual Assault. Also, Is It My Fault? That's Hope and Healing for Those Suffering Domestic Violence. And there's a new one that they have just released, and we've got a couple copies of this. So we want to just encourage you to sign up for this. This is particularly for helping you talk to your children. It's called God Made All of Me. It's a book to help children protect their bodies. And this starts with the fundamental truth that God created everything and applies that truth to kids and their bodies. And so it's also a way that parents can talk with their kids just about, you know, God's design. Also helps provide some protection about the possibility of abuse. So you're going to want to sign up for that. We got a couple of copies of that to give away. And you can do that with a phone call to sign up at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. And if you have a question or a comment, we would love to have you join the program. And if you prefer to remain anonymous, that's completely fine. You can do that. Carissa will just take your information here. We'll put you on anonymously. And you can join Justin and Lindsay Holcomb as we talk today about abuse and about hope and the grace of God in the midst of it all. Stay tuned for more. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken
. So prayer that today's program would be perhaps the beginning of some healing, or at least to moving in the right direction toward healing and hope. Hope and Healing for Those Suffering Domestic Violence is a subtitle of Justin and Lindsay Holcomb's book called Is It My Fault? They've also written one previous to that called Rid of My Disgrace, Hope and Healing for Victims of Sexual Assault. The new one that we want to reference is called God Made All of Me. It's a book to help children protect their bodies. And I should mention that Justin and Lindsay are co-founders of REST, Real Escape from the Sex Trade. And Justin serves as an Episcopal priest and professor of theology and Christian thought at Reformed Theological Seminary and Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. Lindsay counsels victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. And they're both with us today on the phone. And I've been thinking about this, the subject particularly as abuse and violence relates to children, that, you know, if we were to rate evil, it would seem that sexual abuse of children would probably have to be very near the top. You know, talk about Jesus' concern for protecting and caring for children. You know, maybe just give us some of the sad reality of this scourge in our world.
Yeah, the amount of suffering and the prevalence of suffering for children is staggering. I mean, from all the way from female genital mutilation to child sexual slavery and trafficking to the depths of poverty to the sexual abuse, the domestic abuse that they experience. And so, and the only thing more staggering than the prevalence is are the wounds that happen both physically, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, that stay with them for a lifetime. The evil that so many children in the world experience forms and shapes them and bestows to them an identity that's not true. And you look at the evil that so many children suffer, and then you look at Jesus's striking interest in and for and love for children, and it's an amazing thing. I mean, if you look at, to summarize what Jesus has to say about children in his ministry, he blesses children that are brought to him. And anytime a child's brought to him, he's either healing them or blessing them. And he teaches that the reign of God belongs to children, which was unheard of in his time, that he would look at children who were, you know, they didn't have a dignified stance in the culture, and saying the kingdom of God belongs to those such as these. And then he makes children the model of entering the kingdom and reign of God. And he actually says that children are the models of the greatness. You have to be like a child, childlike in your faith. So he blesses them. He says that they're the model of entering the kingdom. They're the model of greatness in the kingdom of God. And then he calls his disciples to welcome children. And he says that that is a sign of true greatness in his kingdom. And then he gives the service of children ultimate significance as a way of saying, if you serve them, that's how you receive me. And if you take care of you, if you take care of them, you're receiving the one who has sent you. You're actually doing this unto me. And then it was children that acclaimed him to be the son of David. So the role, if you were to look at, read the Gospels, read the ministry of Jesus, and keep an eye on how Jesus talks about children and how children are responding to and involved in the ministry of Jesus, and it's pretty shocking.
You know, I'm just thinking that we don't always do a very good job of talking to our children about their bodies, and that's one of the reasons I know you wrote this book, because it's there's some simple, relatable story for 2 to 8 year old children, designed to help them protect their bodies and convey clear messages that God made every part of their body. I mean, what have we missed something over the years, or is it just a reaction to kind of where society seems to be going in terms of our, pushing kids to grow up too fast, or what do you think?
Yeah, well, yeah, going back to on the ministry of Jesus and children thing, I mean, Jesus's love, honor, and care for children should lead his church to imitate his care for children and take action actively to protect them from those who would try to harm them. And as you have indicated, it looks like something's changed. What's happening? I think it's happening both in the church. I think that too often children aren't seen as full members and really involved. They're kind of, you know, many churches don't have a significant children's ministry. And I'm not saying you have to have a program. I'm saying however you do it, do children figure prominently, and are they treated as fully human, or are they just kind of like, you know, they're just a, you know, sit around until they're like 12 or they can actually do something, or 18 when they can give or whatever. I mean, does the church in whatever form of ministry that it has, whether it's children's sermon, whether it's children's ministry, whatever it is, are children significant in the way that the Gospels talk about the significance of children in the kingdom of God? But culturally, and Lindsay can say plenty on this, she actually, a few months ago, she was reading a book called Too Sexy Too Soon, looking at how our culture has sexualized children, just from the clothes that are expected of them, from some of the activities that they're in. So, yeah, I think our culture has has missed out on the protection of children and has turned them into extensions of parents and their dreams and I mean, some of the things that you see in our culture with regard to kids. I mean, the average age of pornography exposure is 11.1 years old, and they're not seeing like PG-13 softcore porn. They're seeing the raunchiest and most violent stuff that gets passed around. 11-year-old, the average age is 11. You know, porn is so accessible on the internet that Playboy, just today it went out, Playboy is no longer going to even be doing nude pictures because it's useless. They said, you know what, pornography is so out there that what we do isn't anything. We're just going to have articles now and maybe a few pictures of women in bikinis and some clothes, but they're not even doing nudity anymore because it's not that big of a deal in the cultural sense because it's so accessible. And that's what's shaping our children and shaping – that's also the culture is not only shaping some of our children but also shaping those who are engaging with our children, from youth pastors to teachers to coaches. So we live in such a highly sexually charged and sexualized culture that it's basically encouraging others to see other people as sexual objects almost regardless of age.
Lindsay, say more about that we're objectifying each other and kids especially, it seems like.
Absolutely. I mean, that book, Justin, reference Too Sexy Too Soon was really insightful for me. I think I read it before we even had our girls. And I remember the biggest takeaway that this author, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but her point was, you know, this is our culture. This is happening. Our kids are being exposed to things left and right. And you don't want to put them in a bubble. So what do? Like, you're freaked out as a parent. So the whole point is you need to engage with your children on what they're seeing and hearing. And of course, as it's developmentally appropriate, and you can still limit certain things. There's toys that Justin and I are like, you know, that's just not a real uplifting, encouraging toy, especially for a little girl. But we'll talk about it with them and we'll say, you know, let's talk about this toy. Like, why do you want this? Why do you want to play with this? This is why mom and dad feel like, you know, it's not very celebratory of a woman's body or, you know, just women in general. And so having that dialogue with your children is important, whether it's a toy, whether it's something they're seeing. Talk to your kids, especially your boys, about, you know, porn and the internet, because if you don't talk to your children about these things, someone else is going to. And that was kind of the motivation of writing this book, of we need to be steps ahead of predators. We need to be steps ahead of this, you know, cultural over-sexualized, you know, sexualization of our children. We need to be proactive and ahead of the game so that we can advocate for our children. That's our job. That's what we need to be doing. And the things that they're going to be exposed to, it's going to be, I'm sure, getting more and more as, you know, years go on and just different things become more accessible to them. But it can be overwhelming. It can be shocking and saddening. And maybe parents just feel like, oh, this is just out of my league. But I would say you got to talk to your kids, and there's great resources like that book out there, you know, our children's book, God Made All of Me. Like, you can read with your kids, you can do it bit by bit. You don't have to have the big talk all at once. And I think that's where parents can feel overwhelmed of, so I have to talk about everything at a certain point. And Justin and I thought is talk to them bit by bit, build a foundation, and, you know, slowly start building that relationship of open communication as they are growing and as they're getting to see their different things and hearing things.
Let me bust in just to say we're going to talk more about that very thing in just a couple minutes. We have a hard break coming up, and I want to encourage you to stay tuned for Connecting Faith.
We pour out our miseries, God just hears a melody.
Today we're talking about the large subject of domestic violence. This is October's National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It's more than what we can fully accomplish in 1 hour's program, but we hope that today may be the beginning step for you of crying out for help. I want to just recommend that if you'd like to find out more about some of the writings of Justin and Lindsay Holcomb and the resources that they have, a number of links and resources are available at the website, justinholcomb.com. www.thefaithradio.com. So check that out. We'll put a link up on our website as well, but I encourage you to just go there to find resources. Justin and Lindsay Holcomb have co-written books called Is It My Fault? Hope and Healing for Those Suffering Domestic Violence, and also Rid of My Disgrace, Hope and Healing for Victims of Sexual Assault. The new one that they've written is called God Made All of Me. It's a book to help children protect their bodies. And the reality is that, as we know, our culture is looking at each other as not as humans, but as commodities. And I want to say a little bit more about this book, Justin, maybe just about what your hope is for this book. The subtitle is A Book to Help Children Protect Their Bodies. You know, we want to do it right. How is what this book presents going to help us do that?
Well, it's both theologically, biblically grounded, but it's practically useful. So it's a great tool for parents. And it's about protecting their bodies from sexual abuse, but it has a larger vision, which is just the fact that a child should be allowed to expect that they would be treated with dignity, and that their caregivers and parents would only do touch that is healthy and safe, is not touching their private parts or harming their body in any way. And so the whole idea starts with the big idea of the title of the book, God Made All of Me. And we just go through and explain, God made everything and he called it good. He made people and he called them very, very good. And he made you. And so it starts with the foundation that you're made in the image of God, that you are special, that God made you, and he made all of your body parts. And some parts are for sharing, you know, hands and feet for high fives and that kind of thing. And some body parts are not for sharing, and those are called private parts. And we just go through and explain. So what we want to do is give a child an understanding of the fact that all of their body was made by God, all of their body is a good creation, and then starting the conversation, creating a tool. The book is a tool for parents and caregivers to start the conversation about private parts and appropriate and inappropriate touch, and healthy and safe touch versus touch that is confusing or hurts them or makes them feel bad. And so it's both because we were looking at a handful of books for our children, and we're taking some that were the Christian books and doing some of the God Made Everything kind of stuff, God Made You, and then some of the other books that were not anti-Christian, but they also weren't explicitly Christian, but they were really helpful, practical books, and we wanted to kind of take the best of and put it into one resource that is both biblically sound, but also practically helpful. And it's for 2 to 8-year-olds because that's the age range of having a lot of these conversations and having not just one big conversation, but numerous conversations. So back to your question, the hope for the book is that the content of the book would be delivered to children and something that would be foundational for how they understand themselves and as the creatures of God, the images of God, and how the significance of that, the dignity of that. But also, in addition to the information, it helps create the lines of communication. That way, a child can, once the parents and caregivers start having these conversations with children, they can realize, I have some questions. The parents can invite their questions, and the children can ask questions. The parents can, add information. And if something were to happen, if they didn't feel safe or they were harmed or confused, because that line of communication was open, it gives them a better opportunity to trust and know mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, whomever that caregiver is. They apparently want to hear things about this, and they started the conversation, and they told me I could ask questions, and I have some questions. So both content and lines of communication hopefully will be created because of this tool.
Sure. By the way, we do have some 2 copies of the book to give away. It will be a helpful resource to you. 877-933-2484 is the phone number. Call to sign up for a copy of those, 877-93-FAITH. And if you have a question or comment, too, we'd love to have you join the conversation talking today about domestic violence, abuse, how we can help our children protect their bodies, talking particularly about protecting our kids. We live in a culture that that preys on the vulnerable. And I'm interested, I guess, in what we shouldn't do when we're talking to our children about this area, because we have lots of conversations about stranger danger, and maybe we've kind of gone overboard on that. But Lindsay, maybe we'll start with you about maybe some things not to do.
Well, I think, you know, on that note of stranger danger, for parents to realize the problem actually is not the strangers. You know, there's that myth of stranger in the bushes, stay away from them and you'll be safe. Well, that's not what we're seeing as the problem. I mean, that does happen. There are stranger assaults, and we don't want to say it's non-existent, but it's a very small percentage, like 2% are, you know, strangers that are assaulting children. What we are seeing is 87 to 93% of assaults are done by people that the parents know. And so that might be, you know, a coach. It could be a teacher. It could be a babysitter. It could be a sibling or a friend's sibling. You know, maybe if they're over at a party or birthday party, it could be a neighbor. It could be a family member as well. So I think if parents can understand that piece of, you know, the majority of assaults that are taking place in our children are by someone that we know, someone that we are trusting, it'll allow parents not to view everyone as a potential perpetrator, but just to have their radar up and kind of be, you know, aware of just some key things. And you don't want to be telling your children, you know, stay away from strangers, because that's going to just put fear in your children of anyone they meet. But I think we talk to our children and we use the language of tricky people. And we say, you know, there are some people out there that are just a little bit tricky. And they might try and convince you to help them with, you know, maybe they lost an animal, or they might come up to you at a playground and say that your mom and dad is sick and they need to help you. So there's a couple of things you can do. You can just, you know, slowly and developmentally, like age appropriate, talk to your children about this and just say, you know, an adult should never need your help other than mom or dad or maybe your teacher. An adult does not need your help. If their animal's missing, that's fine. That they can go and handle that themselves. Mom or dad is sick, or if we are in an accident, we have key people that are going to come get you. And in our family, we have a code, like password, so that if someone needed to, you know, abruptly go pick them up at school, our children can say, well, what's the password? And so we would have imparted the password to this caregiver that's picking up our children. But I think you just want to be real gentle with your children and just, you know, slowly kind of talk to them about these things of, you know, your body is special and nobody should be touching your body unless I'm helping you in the bathroom or the tub, or if we're at the doctor's and I'm with you. But outside of that, nobody needs to touch your body. And so you can kind of just build the foundation there, and have it done in a real safe and gentle, non-alarming way.
Let's take a question from a caller. Esther called in, listening to Faith at 1270. And she says, as a neighbor, how can we go about addressing concerns in our neighbor's home? For example, the cops show up a lot in the area, and she's also heard crying from the house before. Without being too invasive, how can she show concern? Is there a way that we can best pray for our neighborhoods, and how do we best intervene when needed?
This is Lindsay's specialty, so go for it.
As I say, my first thought on that is you want to be really careful, because, I mean, I think there's that human nature. We just want to, like, go over there and, you know, what's the matter? What's happening? But, you know, if we imagine, well, maybe the mom is in a domestic violence situation. Maybe she's being assaulted by boyfriend, husband, partner, whoever's in there. So you want to be careful with not making things worse. And so there's a couple practical things. You know, if you can kind of, if this neighbor who I love her heart in this, you know, if she can try and, you know, maybe if she's like out putting the trash out and she sees maybe the mom's out there and the mom looks like, okay, you know, just alone, you can say, you know, are you doing okay? Do you need anything? Like, hey, if you ever want to come over and have coffee with me and hang out, would love it. Or, hey, if your kids ever need, like, just to come over so you can just get a couple of things done. Like, so you can kind of slowly start to, you know, put yourself into their life and be helpful. And then that way you can build trust and just get more of the story without going over there and, you know, perhaps making things worse. Because if you go over there and you're, you know, starting to make accusations and you don't know the full story and there is a perpetrator in the house, they might make things worse to punish the victim or punish the rest of the members in the home. So I would say slowly start to build trust with, you know, if you think it's a mom that's in there that's needing help, or maybe the children, you know, talking to them outside, like, how are things going? You know, did your mom need anything? you know, if you ever need to come over, you know, you can, like, my house is safe. So that, and you can tell that if, as you build trust with the mom, you know, if you ever need to come over, like, you can come. And then as you're building trust with her and more of the story comes out, let's say hypothetically it's a domestic violence situation, you can, you know, discreetly pass her a number of a shelter and say, you know, this is a great resource. I know some folks over there. They really do help women that are needing help get to safety. And so you can kind of go about it that way. But I would say just be very careful that you don't make things worse. You don't want to, I mean, if you call the police, they're not going to be able to probably give you any information. But another piece I would say is get involved with your local domestic violence shelter. Get involved with your local sexual assault crisis center so you can find out what are the needs in my community. What can I be doing practically to help? That would be my two takeaway points. Okay. Justin, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I like the fact of having a sense of caution because you don't want to, one, make the accusations because you don't know what's going on, but you have ideas of what's going on. So I think the more gentle, hey, you know, if you ever want to come over or, you know, but also don't hesitate to call the police when you do hear the screaming and shouting. The more times the police go over there, the more time there's records of a domestic disturbance, the better the chances if she or he were to call because of domestic violence occurring. So I think just because the police are showing up, they showed up for who knows why they showed up and who called, but you can also call. Lindsay and I have called before because we've heard something or we've seen something driving down the road one time. You know, Lindsay almost jumped out of the car to confront an abuser who was in his car with his girlfriend or wife. So be proactive on the calling and just tell, you can do it anonymously. They're not going to, the police are not going to go over there and say, hey, your next door neighbor called. They'll do it wisely and they're not allowed to tell who called. So I think the more you can get involved in that way, the better, and open up the conversation with whoever you think is being harmed, and but you do want to be wise on involvement. You don't want to get sucked into the dysfunction and put your own family in harm's way. I wouldn't let, if you have children, I wouldn't let the children be going over there at all. You just want to make sure if it hasn't seemed like a safe place. Don't hyper-spiritualize it and act like a savior and start sending your children over there. Find safe ways to be involved.
And before we take a break, I know you addressed earlier about, you know, recognizing the red flags. Are there you know, a few red flags that we, you know, as maybe concerned church members, you know, parents meeting our kids at school and running into other parents and things, what red flags should we be watching for?
I'll do a few, and then Lindsay can fill it out a little bit. One thing to keep in mind is that abusers are not rageaholics who just abuse anytime. They're actually really rational and thoughtful about it and strategic. They abuse when no one's around. If they do physical harm, they do the physical harm on parts of their body, usually, that are covered by clothes. So they're not just, you know, anger freaks who just snap and they don't care who's there. They you'll notice that they usually do all the glaring and bullying and verbal and emotional and physical abuse when there's no one else that can see it, because they're really smart about that. So some of the things to look for are the demeanor of the spouse or partner in the relationship. If they're out in public and they start shutting down and they're uninvolved, or they never get out away from the other, you know, their spouse or partner in the relationship, if they're not allowed to go out, that's one, noticing how they interact in public. Even though an abuser might be strategic in when and how he abuses, he's an abuser, so it actually comes out when he's not expecting it and he's not even noticing it. When he makes fun of or makes verbal jabs or is disrespectful of his wife or her husband in front of others and demeaning and makes fun of them, keep an eye out for that. But watching the children, if you have access to the children in Sunday school, or you're a teacher and you start noticing gastrointestinal stuff and their stomachs hurt, if they aren't they don't like being around when their dad picks them up, that's a significant one. I mean, so go with your gut. There's a reason you have that gut instinct. And I've been encouraging parents to go with their gut a lot more. God made your brain in an impressive way. Your brain is actually frequently picking up things that you're not even registering with your rational, insightful stuff. But your instincts are picking up on things, and there's a reason you have that. Now, sometimes, I wouldn't go, following your gut in crazy, ridiculous ways. But if you have some hunch or a gut on something, gut instinct, pay attention to that. Explore it a little bit. Keep an eye out for it. So, Lindsay, okay. What are the other signs?
Well, I would say, if it's, anybody, if it's a teen in a dating relationship or an adult in a dating relationship, you just kind of watch them and see, is there a hypervigilance? Do they seem to be, either in like kind of a post-traumatic stress state all the time, or are they just hypervigilant and scared of, what's going to come and what's going to happen? And, you can kind of explore that some more of, what's going on. And then just as you're talking to your friend or family member who is in a relationship that you have some questions about, just see, how do they talk about their partner or spouse? Are they, do they adore them? Is there respect? Is there admiration? Or is it more fear and kind of, more timidness about it? And that kind of can just help you get a little bit better picture of, where are we in this, on the spectrum of healthy relationship to maybe possibly abusive relationship. And then that just gives you a launching pad to ask more questions of, what kind of things do you guys do together? Why do you enjoy them? Like, as you're having coffee or tea and just having those conversations. But I think the big one that I saw a lot for women coming into the shelter was slowly, or sometimes not so slowly, but over time, they had become so isolated from their community. And so it might, that was the perpetrator was doing that, of just pulling them away from friends and family and their church and just everyone that could have some type of say in their life or some type of influence. And so it might be that you haven't heard from this person a long time. You got to go and really seek them out in a way that's going to be safe for both of you, but really seek them out of, let's have coffee, let's get together, I'll come to you, let's go for a walk. Because very often that's what a perpetrator does. That is their tactic. Let me get them away from everyone that's going to care about them so that I'm the only person that they can rely on, and they will believe that I'm the only one that cares for them. It's what they do.
All right, let's take a quick break and come back. We've got a couple more questions, areas that we want to talk to Justin and Lindsay Holcomb about. They've co-written several great books, including Is It My Fault? And Rid of My Disgrace. Lindsay and Justin also founded REST, Real Escape from the Sex Trade. And Lindsay counsels victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. Justin is a Episcopal priest and professor of theology, and they're with us today on Connecting Faith. We've got a couple of copies of their new book, God Made All of Me, a book to help children protect their bodies. You can sign up for that at 877-93-FAITH. More in just a moment. National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and today talking with Justin and Lindsay Holcomb. They both have written and taught on this area extensively, and we're honored to have them with us. Justin's been on several times with us on Connecting Faith, and this is the first time for Lindsay to join with us, and we appreciate that. She counsels victims of sexual assault and domestic violence, and along with Justin's co-founded REST, Real Escape from the Sex Trade. You can find more about their writings at their website, justinholcomb.com. And we're down to about only 5 minutes or so left, guys, so we don't have a lot of time. But I did want to get to a couple of questions. One, Rachel had called in and asked if the statistics for sexual abuse is the same in the secular versus Christian environments. So maybe you can say a word about that. And then an anonymous caller wants to know if the book, God Made All of Me, would be good to talk with kids who have experienced abuse and are in the process of healing.
One, the statistics, yes, it is the same, and it's actually, there's something shocking about inside the church and outside the church. What has been found, and I serve on the board for GRACE, Godly Response to Abuse in Christian Environments, and this is what we study, this is what we read, this is what we're involved in, is that religious perpetrators have commit more assaults against more children, and the abuse is more violent and intense than non-religious perpetrators. So those who are in the churches actually do more numerical harm and more emotional and physical harm than those outside of the church. So there's a disgusting nature to perpetrators within the church that should be getting our attention. The average perpetrator has 120 victims in their lifetime. They are masterful and strategic at deceiving and harming children, and parents need to be more involved and more strategic and be outthinking and be more aware because of the sheer expertise of deceiving and harming children that they do. And yes, the book is very good for children because what it does is it's not focused on watch out for those tricky people. It's actually focused on the positive of God made your body and God wants you to be safe and God loves you, and the parents and caregivers' job is to support what God wants, which is your safety. So I think it would lay a good foundation for a child who has a lot of questions right now if they've experienced sexual abuse.
Maybe we don't have time to take. Yeah, let's take the anonymous call on line one. We only have about 3 minutes left, but she wanted to just get some advice. So go ahead. You're on with Justin and Lindsay Holcomb.
Okay. Hi. We definitely need a copy of the book. We're going to get one. But we're in the middle of something like this, where we have a very young son who was sexually assaulted by an older male cousin. And our son's in therapy. He doesn't have language around that, so we think the book would be really helpful. But what we're really struggling with is we have family members now that are pitting against and kind of putting us on the outside of things and saying, it was just play, it was just normal. And we were advised by professionals that there should be no contact. And so we're kind of stuck in what do we do? How do we keep... You know, our position is firm. We're just going to keep him away from those. But we have in-laws who are trying to minimize and say things, you know, changing the facts.
Let me give Justin a chance. Lindsay, we only have about 90 seconds or so for response.
Okay. I want to encourage you to keep on doing that. No contact. I get the family wants to have the nice family secret. They don't want to believe that. And I understand it, but that's crazy talk. And I love the fact that your default mode is to protect your child. Absolutely err on the side of protecting your child. And there's no such thing as playing in that kind of way. There's curiosity, but a lot of the abuse takes place between older children and younger children. That's what happened to me. And I'm glad that my parents did not force me to be around an extended family member who was older than me who did that. And I think respecting and protecting your son looks like that. And if the family can't get that, then they need to explore their concern and love for you and that little boy, your child. So that's a no-brainer. And if they can't get that and respect that, and then they forfeit the right to actually determine how your child's going to what kind of interaction your child's going to have with the person who misused that little boy's body.
We only have about 20 seconds left. Lindsay, I don't know if there's anything you'd like to add or maybe a concluding comment.
I am amazed at what you're doing as his mom, and I think just be encouraged that he's going to grow up and his story is going to be, my mom and dad fought for me and they protected me after this happened, and this isn't the end of my story, but they made sure that this didn't continue. And so extended family has to deal with, you know, things changing. And so if holidays and get-togethers change, they need to deal with that. But he's your priority, and you're doing the best thing for getting him into therapy, talking about this with him, and keeping him safe. You don't ever have to feel guilty for protecting your child.
Good words. Much more that we should talk about. We'll need to have Justin and Lindsay back because it's a topic that has much to review. We've been talking with Justin and Lindsay Holcomb. They've co-written several books, including Is It My Fault? And the new one, That God Made All of Me, a book to help children protect their bodies. You can find out more about their writings at Justin's website, justinholcomb.com, justinholcomb.com. And you can also find the show online.